This is episode 355. What are your thoughts about diets or being told you can't have the food you want? Do you find it triggering? Does it lead to something or someone inside of you rebelling against that and eating the food anyway? Plus a bit more, like the whole block, bag or bottle. In this podcast episode, we talk about how to navigate boundaries around food and when you need hard boundaries. We also talk about whether or not sugar binges are actually related to unhealed trauma within you from way back when. Not only that, we actually get into a topic that many people are too scared to talk about, the healthy at every size conversation, which inevitably brings up topics like shame, guilt, and embarrassment, as well as the question, is it actually body positivity, or are we talking about obesity celebration? There's so much goodness in this episode and so many challenging conversations that we go into, and I'm really looking forward to you getting it in your ears. So without further ado, let's get into it.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? Welcome back to another episode of the show where in 2024, it's my mission to coach 500 people to get control of their sugar cravings and sugar binges so they can stop yo-yo dieting, stop obsessing about food, and finally create a body that they feel confident being in. And if there was ever an episode or a guest that pertains to that mission of helping people deal with their emotional eating, overeating, or binge eating, then it's this one that you're listening to right now. Formally appearing on episode 169, which is a must listen to once you've finished here, is a wonderful and endearing, beautiful human named Christy McCammon. Who is Christy? Well, she's a speaker, blogger, influencer, and coach in the area of weight loss and food addiction. And she knows a lot because she actually spent most of her life food obsessed and overweight. In 2017, she started eating with a concept called food boundaries and lost 100 pounds. Which for those of us in the kilogram metric system, it's almost 50 kilograms, which is a very large amount of weight to lose. And she has maintained that weight loss now for over 4 years, which is just incredible. She specializes now in weight loss by combining faith and food. She is on a mission to help others free themselves from the struggles of food and ultimately live life unbinged. How good is that for a program or business name or social media handle? Life unbinged. I love it. I love it. I love it. Christy, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I am good. Thank you so much for having me here. So much. I had so much fun last time and it feels like forever ago. And it's fun to be back. So thank you.
It really does feel like forever ago because I was listening to the episode we did on episode 169 and we were talking about COVID and lockdowns. And I was like, oh my God, that feels like a millennia ago.
Yeah, it does.
Well, and it was such a pertinent time for the conversation that we had then too, because, you know, everyone was, especially in Melbourne where I am in Australia, lockdown and, you know, nothing to do but eat food. The only places that were open were supermarkets.
Yep.
And it was such a challenging time, which arguably we're still recovering from, especially from a weight perspective.
Yeah, I agree. A lot of people, it either went really good. People made a huge commitment to health and usefulness and purpose. And a lot of people just got further in the hole of, well, this is depressing, because it was. It was weird. It was unknown. It was scary. And people just used that and took on food and TV for comfort, which was not a great combination. And so coming out of it has been really hard for a lot of people because you can get further down that hole of eating emotionally.
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of people discovered emotional eating in that time, whether they've been doing it a long time and it's just come into their awareness, or whether they actually realized, I have no other outlet for anything, for any emotion, for any feeling, for any, you know, exercise, gym, you know, whatever it is, sport or however ways that they dealt with their stuff before. Yeah. And they're like, oh, wow, everybody's gained weight. Even the healthy people have gained weight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. People, you're right. That was like the beginning of emotional eating for some people. They didn't know it before, but it came about and it hit hard.
Before we get into a deeper conversation about this food addiction stuff, just before we hit record, was talking about how incredible you are, because I want you to tell everybody how many kids you have and that you homeschool and run a business and do all of these things. So just give us a bit of an overview of what does Christy's life look like and who are you?
Okay. My life sometimes looks a little crazy. Looks a little crazy, but it looks joyful. It's important to me to have the joy and know that you know, there's a bigger purpose than just running around doing this, doing that. Sometimes I wake up, I get about doing my lists and what we have to get done for the day. But to stop and have some slower times and to have joy and laughter, that is what it's all about. But I have five kids. One is 22, one is 19 in college, and then one is 16, then 13 and 11. And I homeschool all the way through for all of them. And it's been great. I love it. Homeschool's a really good fit for us. And we have co-ops and friends and serving opportunities and work opportunities and really cool stuff. And my kiddos can help in my business. You know, I just do coaching and sharing, and I started making some different products and food journals, and they can help do things and they can help fill orders and stuff like that. So that's kind of fun. I like that they get to do that.
Oh, and exposing kids to this type of business and this type of work, I think has another layer of meaning that they probably won't know for many years, but being around you and seeing you help other people with the same kind of challenges and building that awareness for children that, oh, people have real problems with food and it's actually really common and it's everywhere, I think would be, yeah, a really important understanding of so many people in society. And for those, for your children to be able to walk into society and just understand this about so many people, I think would be a gift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it's one of those things. It's become such a part of me now for the past 6-ish years of the way I eat, the way I live. Mm-hmm. And I don't think about it all the time in terms of what I'm doing. And then I'm working with someone and I get an email and I do share these with my family. A lot of times people will comment on a post or something and I'll share that. That's public. But sometimes I'll get an email from someone that is just so incredibly heartfelt and real that I will, as we're sitting around as a family, I'll say, okay, guys, I got to share something with you, because that's, you know, a victory in my work and my job that I'm doing, and say, hey, look at what this person has accomplished and look at where they struggled and look at what, where they're at now, and their appreciation for me, number one, but their appreciation for themselves, most importantly, and thankful to the Lord for allowing them to see some success or some freedom. And so I'm able to share those stories. And then my kids think, oh, well, yeah, that, no wonder you're sitting answering all these emails or talking to these people or coaching these people. You're actually changing, you're helping them. I'm not changing their life. They're changing their life, but I'm helping them walk through that process. And so it's neat for them to be able to see what I'm doing, because sometimes I feel like, gosh, I'm on my phone a lot, or I'm sitting at the computer a lot, or I get up really early, work in the night, and, you know, responding to things. And it's helpful for them to see what I'm doing and people that just need help, and that we can be a blessing to people that just need some extra support that they don't have.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. That's amazing. It's such beautiful work. And I mean, I sort of dance in this world as well, right? Of doing that kind of work. And yeah, when you get a message or an email or somebody comments even publicly, it's even more fulfilling when somebody does it publicly, in the sense that it's like, whoa, somebody was so confident in their experience or so proud of what they were able to do with me alongside them that they wanted to announce it to the world. And it's like, oh my God. And then, you know, it's like for a moment, the imposter syndrome washes away.
Yes. Oh yes. I have that every single day. That imposter syndrome is real. Do you have that too?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. For sure. Well, and especially, and maybe even between just you and I, because you've actually had a physical experience, right? I've never had a weight issue, right? I've never had a challenge with food that has caused physical consequence, if that makes sense. I got here out of my own personal development journey, and I definitely use and have used sugar as a medication, you know, and a suppressant. And that's how I got into the world of emotional eating. There's multiple ways that I got into this world, but at the core, I had a problem with food and sugar. But I don't publicly, sort of business and podcast is not built on my own story, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's more built on the truth of, like, you're being lied to by marketing and advertising agencies, and doctors don't deal with this. And I used to work in a hospital, but I sometimes feel that sense of imposter syndrome, because I'm like, oh, I've never been in that body. I can mentally and intellectually understand how awful it must feel, because I've also been in awful experiences and hated being who I am, and, you know, being awful to myself with food and without food, and had, you know, made terrible life decisions. And that makes, you know, brings up a lot of shame and embarrassment and disgrace and guilt. So from that lens, I can absolutely feel empathy and understanding. But yeah, sometimes I think, oh, Yeah, I deal like yourself, mostly with women, mostly with mums, and I'm not a woman, nor am I a mother, nor have I been obese, right?
Right. But you know what you're doing. You have a gift. You have a gift and you are helping people like crazy, which is awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
But I do feel that. Yeah, you're welcome. I do feel that as well, in that I'm not perfect. Mm-hmm. And reality is nobody can be perfect. Mm-hmm. Nobody can be perfect this side of heaven. Nobody. And we have to throw that off. We have to throw that off. And so that affects me and the way I coach and what I do and every single person, because so many people, and maybe you deal with women who also think this, well, I blew it today, or I didn't follow my food plan, or however they want to say it, so I will just start again tomorrow.
Yeah.
And we've all, or many of us have heard the term, if one tire gets slashed, are we going to go around and slash the other three tires? Not a good idea, right? We should just focus on that tire. But it's a very common thing with eating that if you, whether it happens in the morning or the night or afternoon, okay, I'm off plan today and I am full on in eating what I want, when I want, as much as I want, because tomorrow I'm not going to. Well, we cannot be perfect. So we cannot do all or nothing. We have to decide that a lot, middle ground, great is great. Mm. It's great. We're not going to be perfect.
Yeah, totally. I agree. Off that idea of not being perfect, and also factoring in that you shared that, you know, your life is very joyous and there's a lot of love and care and beautiful people. And I remember from our last conversation that your husband was really supportive in this journey. I'm curious to ask the question, because a lot of the work that probably we both do, but definitely that I do, is through the lens of people using food to hide or bury uncomfortable, shameful, embarrassing, or dark experiences or feelings. And that can be trauma. That can be quite significant trauma, but it can be just simply, you know, the relationship with food I have is embarrassing. And so a lot of people think, well, because I've got a food addiction, let's say, then the root cause must be terrible. But your life was so full of joy, right? And there's so much love and care and, you know, faith. So I'm curious, does food addiction and emotional eating always come with, you know, some kind of trauma or hatred or darkness that's within us? Or is it just like this biological, our, you know, we're addicted to sugar like people are addicted to heroin?
Great question. And I think it can be either. Mm-hmm. For me, I did in my early childhood, there was some traumas, there was some issues that were healed and addressed with food. Food was safe. Food was a safe place. And if I was eating, it meant I was safe. So that is not good, but that was fact. That just was. Mm-hmm. And so that carried on into the rest of my life, where even though I wasn't in trauma and I didn't have harmful situations, life was great. My marriage was great. Having kids was great. But I still found myself feeling like food was safe. Whenever I was alone, I would eat. So for me, it did stem from that. Mm-hmm. But with that being said, it could have started later had there not have been that trauma.
Yeah.
I think that some people have a propensity towards addiction and it will come out at different times. It just will. A coach that works for me and with me, hers, she did not have any food issue until I think she said she has seven kids. She had her fifth baby.
Whoa,
and
seven.
On number five, after that, she said she just kind of started gaining a little bit of weight and wanting to eat more. And I think that's when she felt like the emotional eating started. So she didn't have that. Maybe that propensity, it's almost like a propensity that can lay dormant until something just happens. It doesn't even have to be a major thing, but addiction is progressive. And so if you have that propensity, you start eating a little bit and then it becomes more. And then maybe you do another diet and then you start eating more. I've heard so many people say that restriction is bad. Restriction is bad because it causes you to then binge. I don't buy it for a second. I don't believe what I'm doing is restriction. I don't eat sugar and flour, but it's a nice guardrail. Yeah. It's not a restriction. And those people that end up going back to eating those processed foods, because addiction is progressive, they just have progressed. It's not that restricting or cutting had caused more. It just will progress. So I think it can happen at any time. A lot of people I work with and talk to, it's been their whole life. And a lot of people just kind of realized it's more and more, or they're realizing that they just can't handle it or fight it as well as they used to because they're getting older and their body's changing. And so they realize, wow, I've always had this problem, but now it's catching up to me. That's often where I hear.
I am so curious to have this conversation about the restriction and deprivation, because I maybe have a different school of thought, or maybe we both have multiple schools of thought happening at the same time. But what I've found is that for many people, when we put food boundaries in place or hard boundaries in place, people rebel against those boundaries, and their inner child feels like the boundary or the limitation is mimicking an oppressive parent that they had at the age of 10, or any authoritarian figure, you know, like police. Like, our life is governed by rules and oppressors. Like, you know, I'm sort of using big language, but the idea is that we can't live freely because we'll get a speeding fine and we'll get fired from our job and we won't get money to be able to buy food and feed our family. And so a lot of people look for their own liberation in tiny ways in their life where they can actually express themselves or feel a sense of empowerment or freedom. And although we wouldn't necessarily put binge eating and empowerment in the same sentence, I feel like in the moment, the act of doing it and overcoming the boundary, overcoming the oppression of the rule, overcoming the limitation is a moment of personal empowerment where people say, no, I do what I want. I'm in control of my life, right? I'm really curious to have this conversation around when food boundaries are not causing you to binge and what's different in the people that can respect food boundaries versus are triggered by them.
Yeah, that is great. I have found that some people will just come at me fast, like, why do you do these restrictions? And I'm very clear that I decided when the time was right, when I realized, wow, I have to eat to live, but I don't have to eat processed sugar and flour. That was liberating. That was empowerment. That was a moment of, oh, yeah, okay, I've been making excuses for myself forever. I'm going, well, I have to eat food. So, well, no, I didn't have to eat Oreos and Pop-Tarts and Cheetos, right? And I was eating a lot of that. Didn't have to ever again in my whole life. And I could eat and live an abundant life, right? Mm. So when someone comes at me with restrictions, I do find that it's a defensive, it's a rebellion, you know, like, oh no, I don't want anyone telling me what I can or can't do. Well, I was putting up those guardrails for me because it made my life better. And everyone that I've worked with, almost everyone that I've worked with, has specifically agreed the boundaries are just guardrails to allow us to fully live life. When I step outside of that, and my journey's not been perfect, I have not had 5 years without a break or a, you know, bite off plan. I have, you know, researched and thought, oh, maybe I can eat this. I can't and I don't, but I've had those moments. And, you know, when you step outside of that beautiful design of grace and boundaries, it's yucky. It never works out, right? It just never works out for me. And most people that I work with that continue working with me have come to that same conclusion that these are guardrails. They're a gift. Guardrails are a gift, just like on a highway. Right? If you kind of swerve and you hit the guardrail, it's like, oh, yes. Oh, yeah, that's there. Good, good, good. Let's keep going. If that wasn't there and you go off the cliff, it's really hard to get back up that cliff, get the car up, get the person up, all the injuries and whatever. So it's hard to go that way. With that being said, sometimes those boundaries, especially at the very beginning, the very first week or two or month, can cause discomfort because it's like, wait, at first you think, okay, this is good. This is good. I can do this. Wait a minute. I want that. I don't want anyone telling me what to do. I don't want to determine this. I want that. And then very quickly realize, okay, let's get back within the grace, the boundaries, and realize I don't have to live out there. I don't have to. There's no benefit. There's no reason. And the latest thing I've been telling people, not the latest, but abstinent eating, if you will, free from refined sugar and flour, that has been what has been eaten since the beginning of time. Processed food is only about 50 years old. In America, it started around the 1970s. Maybe even if we say 1920, let's say it's 100 years. Okay. That's a very short time. Mm-hmm. Now, yes, it's our whole life that processed sugar has been available, but we can go back to eating how it was even 100 years ago or 500 years ago and see that we don't overeat the way we would when we're eating the processed food, because steak or meat, whether someone's a meat eater or not, whatever they eat, or beans, those things just have fiber. They fill us up. They keep our blood sugar secure and level, and we can just live differently. We're not having those spikes up and down, which require emotional eating, require, I got to eat more. I need that fix because here I'm taking a dive with my blood sugar. So when we eat those three meals a day or two meals, whatever someone has chosen, abstinently, just free from processed sugar and flour, our body is just calmer and our blood sugar is calmer and everything is just easier.
Mm-hmm. What you're describing reminds me in a little way of, well, it's almost like the same psychology or the same thought process, but it's rebelling against sugar. Because I feel like if that unmet need of rebellion or self-empowerment is not met in an alternative way, it will come back to food because food's so easy, right?
Yep.
And so it sounds like flipping the narrative. It's like we're empowered by, you know, absorbing these types of food, and now we're going to be empowered by being the person that doesn't. I don't eat that stuff, right?
That's right.
Yeah, I say no. Don't offend me by asking me if I want chocolate, you know?
Yes, there is empowerment from that. It does feel good. It feels, you know, there's a strength that comes from that, and a health and a confidence. And so many things come when you rid yourself of that, of those types of things. And it is, it's an empowerment of, this has become my identity now, not my sole identity, but a part of my identity, that I am no longer a person who eats sugar and flour. And I believe strongly when you start speaking truth over yourself, you live it. You live it. Now, if every day you get up and say, oh, I gotta eat these vegetables, or I have to do this, or I can't eat that, then you have to take our thoughts captive. We have to be in full control of what goes on in our mind. We have to at least be aware of it. Because if we're hearing negative things all day of, I can't eat this, I can't eat that, look at all that stuff, we're going to end up eating it. But if we turn it and say, look at all this amazing food I get to have, look at these colorful vegetables and fruit and meats and beans and fats and, you know, whatever, it gives us a more positive bent. And so we have to be renewing our mind and being aware of what's going on in our mind, or else it just can control us. And we don't even realize why we're mad. We have to pause long enough to think of our thoughts.
Yeah, well, I guess that's that self-literacy that many people don't have, because life, you know, in the modern world is so fast-paced. It's so intense. And, you know, there's all of these apps and commitments and extracurricular activities for all of the kids. And there's no space to even breathe, let alone do some self-investigation. And so it's so easy to fall into these patterns of using food to fill in, because you can eat food and drink wine as well. Wine, alcohol and mums is a really big one too, because you can drink and eat at the same time as doing all those things, as helping with the kids' homework, you know, as being on a meeting, or, you know, doing your work at your desk. You can eat, you can medicate, you can nourish those emotions in a way that you don't have time to actually do in the day-to-day life. So picture this, right? Unlocking your potential, conquering emotional eating, and gaining insights directly from a health and nutrition expert such as myself. That's what we do inside the Healthy Mums Collective Facebook group, which is currently free to join. If you've ever felt trapped by food challenges, struggled with maintaining a healthy lifestyle, or yearned for a community that understands the reasons why you've yo-yo dieted for years, then there's a new chapter waiting to be written. And this is your chance to start writing it by joining us all on Facebook Lives, on engaging posts that push you out of your comfort zone and into growth, and Q&A sessions with me. All of this works as a platform to begin changing your emotional eating problems for good. Oh, and also, as a special gift, you'll receive my transformative How to Turn Food into Self-Confidence ebook. And that's also for free. I get it. Skepticism might linger. You might think, Maddie, I've heard these ads and I'm not sure. Well, at least a quarter of the members inside the Healthy Mums Collective Facebook group have been paying clients of my emotional eating program at some point over the last 3 or 4 years. So if you're not sure, you can post in the group and ask to find out if I'm the real deal or not. It's totally up to you. To join us in the free Healthy Mums Collective and to end your emotional eating and feel good in your own skin and begin that journey, pop down to the show notes below, click the link, and breeze through 3 simple entry questions. Join today and let's embark on a journey of growth and empowerment. The link is in the show notes below.
That's absolutely true. And it is self-medicating. And I think if when people start to become aware of, I mean, just even those words, self-medicating, those are big words. And if someone can acknowledge the fact that that's what they're doing, that's a great starting point, right? It doesn't have to be this massive place where you're conquering the world. It's let's just start small and realize, am I doing that? Am I self-medicating? Am I turning to food because I need a friend? I'm lonely. I'm bored. And at that point, once you start, when you pause to think about those things, it helps. But you're right. When we move too fast and we don't have any time to think, that's when we're just eating. And 2 years down the road, we realize, wow, we have a big problem on our hands. Or 40 years down the road.
Do you know of Rob Wolf?
No.
So Rob Wolf is an amazing human. He's sort of in the carnivore, but more so the regenerative farming and soil health world. And he's just fantastic for recovering farms and diets and the truth about food nutrition. He's been on Joe Rogan. His whole tagline is that being healthy in the 2000s or the modern world is a form of rebellion.
Yes.
Because, you know, it creates healthy, strong, free-thinking individuals that can't be controlled. Mm-hmm. And that's a danger to the system. So it's like a multiple layer conspiracy kind of concept there. But yeah, the idea that healthy people aren't suppressed, their brains are working clearly, they can make decisions for themselves, they have the capacity to, you know, raise a family, find their own food, do all of this stuff. And I really love that idea because he's all about the healthy rebellion. And I think I think I agree, because the second, if you're remotely in a city or even a smallish town, the second you leave your house, there's food and marketing advertising everywhere. And if it's not that, especially in the US, it's drug advertising, right? And so it is kind of a form of rebellion to be good enough to be able to, it's like you're a spy. You walk out of your house and you see all this colorful advertising and marketing and you're like, no, I know what's really going on. I'm going to look after me. I know what you're trying to do to me. You're trying to manipulate my behavior to buy the food that'll make me addicted and overweight, sign me up to medications. And yeah, if we start, for the people that have that inner rebel, I think using that inner rebel to sort of, be a part of the healthy rebellion is maybe a good way to use that energy.
It's a great way to use that energy. I agree. And it does feel like that because we know what's going on. I can see all the food manufacturers and I try and teach my kids, let's look at the back. What is this that's in this goldfish cracker or whatever it is? And the preservatives and addictive substances, because the design is to get you to eat more, right? They do not want you to stop at a little package. It's more, and the serving sizes are getting bigger and bigger. And then, of course, we're having this and obesity. Also, when processed foods came on the market around the 70s in America, but whatever, around that time frame, that's when obesity rates started climbing. Mm-hmm. That's when it did. Also, increased TV. I mean, there's not just the food, not just processed food, of course. But, and then now there's a solution offered. Take this drug. And the thing is, if we just back out the processed sugar and flour, and I'm not suggesting that's simple. Oh, just don't have that. I'm not suggesting that. But if we do that, then we don't have to take that drug. We can actually back ourselves where we should have been. One of my clients, just in 2.5 months, her A1C went from 11. It was 11. That's very, very high diabetic levels, right? In 2.5 months, it dropped to 6.7.
Amazing.
All she did was follow the food boundaries, eliminating processed sugar, processed flour, eating the vegetables, the fruit, the protein, the grains, and the fat, right? I have a food plan following that. It dropped from 11 to 6.7.
Yeah.
Crazy numbers, right? That's impossible. And it was so cool because her doctor said, what did you do? Medication did you go on? What happened? She said, nothing. This is what I did. And he's like, whoa, we got to talk more. And that is just so neat to see that we can, like, we get into this addiction by eating. It's an eating addiction, but we can get out of it by eating. Mm. Get out of it by eating the right stuff.
I always love the stories where doctors are shocked. I've had a bunch of them as well. And they're like, what are you doing? Why is this happening? I had a client that was diabetic for 23 years and had been working with the hospital dietitian for many of those years with no change. I think every person that I've ever had come through that works with a hospital dietitian has never changed anything. And I know some of those dietitians and they're well-intentioned, but they're just like doctors, restricted by the system that they work in.
That's right.
But I think as well, after 23 years of, you know, doing one thing one way and believing that this is it for me, and then joining a program that's only a couple of months long and being able to reverse those numbers. It's like mind melting for some of these people and the medical professionals that are involved in that person's journey. They're like, what? Like, how is this happening? You know, and they're just freaking out about maybe there's something they don't know, which maybe is what we need to happen, right? Is the medical professionals to start thinking, oh, there's a piece of the puzzle that I actually didn't even know I didn't have.
Right. Yeah, I agree. It's fun to see those numbers and the results and people just having such great success by just eating different things. Mm. Let's change up our diet. We don't need to diet. I hate that word because our diet is simply what we eat.
Yeah.
So it's gotten a bad term, but just change up your lifestyle and the way you eat. You don't have to diet. We eat a lot of food. I eat a lot. I eat 20 ounces of vegetables every day, mm-hmm. 12 ounces of fruit, lots of protein. I mean, good stuff.
Yeah.
Healthy stuff that our bodies love.
So I've got a question and or a talking point, which might be controversial, but I'm known for controversial conversations.
Love it.
In a loving way, in a loving way. The question is, and I noticed this in our space of food addiction, sugar addiction, emotional eating, all that kind of stuff, is that there's a movement by individuals that are suffering from these challenges, but equally from organizations that train practitioners and psychologists and psychotherapists in this type of work. And I've been involved in some of these trainings, and I was sort of debating one of my mentors about this just recently. But it's the idea of diets and all of this kind of stuff being weight focused, and that people, half of the trigger is that they're not accepted for who they are in an overweight body. And that, you know, some people would argue the approaches should not involve a focus on weight at all, mm-hmm. right? I don't necessarily agree with that, because that's what I was debating with. If we just normalize and accept obesity, then we're also normalizing and accepting an increased tax on that, on all of humans to be able to manage the healthcare system. And, you know, we're expecting people to die younger. We're expecting a workforce that's not going to be able to show up in the same way that it has in the past. And, you know, maybe all of these things are good things or bad things, but I'm just curious to have a discussion about these ideas.
Yeah, there's so much wrapped up in that. So
I know.
there, which is good. There has been this body positivity movement, mm-hmm. okay, which actually isn't body positivity. When you think of that movement, it's obesity acceptance. So I'm all about body positivity. Okay. We don't need to say, like, what I say to my kids is, how cool that you can run. Look how God made your arms. Look how you can do those jumping jacks, or look how you're able to sew that little project, whatever it is. Like, let's talk about our bodies and how they're made and how they can function. We don't need to be talking about the weight. Okay. So mm-hmm. when I say this, it's, I'm not saying let's accept obesity and make a world prepared for obesity. I do think it's hard to be obese in the world. I do think people are very unkind. I grew up and I had excess weight, and I was treated very poorly by teachers. So that is not right, right? That kindness should happen across the board. But the idea and what I like to do is focus on what our bodies can do. Mm-hmm. And then in my program, or what I do and what I write about and share about, it's not about let's lose weight, let's lose weight, let's lose weight. It's this: let's get food back in its rightful place so we can fully live our life. Mm-hmm. Because when we are food obsessed, sugar obsessed, looking for that next binge or hit or cleaning up the binge, whatever we're doing, we are exited our life. We're opting out of our life. So mm-hmm. I want people to opt into their life and get food in its rightful place. And the best part is the brain, the calmness of the brain, the mental chaos stops. The weight is a secondary issue. It's secondary. It's an amazing part of it, and it drops. But the first and foremost thing is getting our brain clear so we can fully live. So we can just, whether we have a job or we're just loving on our family or whatever it is we're doing, when we are in the food, all we're thinking about is that next hit. When are we going to mm-hmm. get it? How are we going to get it? Where are we going to clean it up? Where are we going to hide the wrapper? How am I going to get more? That's not living. That's dying. I mean, that's awful. Mm. That's awful. So I really like to come at it that this is what we need to do. We need to renew our mind. We need to slow our life down so we can hear our thoughts. combat our thoughts with the truth, because we're hearing lies all day long. We can't conquer this. We'll always be overweight. You know, no other food will taste this good. Whatever the lie is, we have to recognize it, combat it with the truth. Because if we don't pause long enough to do that, we're going to just continue eating and self-medicating, like you said, get bigger and bigger. And then we have this whole society that is very different. And it's when we look at where it was 50 years ago, even 20 years ago and 10 years ago, the obesity rates are climbing through the roof in children and adults alike. And that, I can't imagine what that's going to look like in 10 or 20 years. So I understand people all, I mean, even Weight Watchers now offers the injectables, the semaglutides, all across the board. Most of the weight loss people are doing that because we just need to get this obesity epidemic down, I think is the thought. I mean, I'm sure there's more to it, but the thought is, let's see if we can just do this easily.
Yeah.
But if people are going to continue eating that way, it's going to keep rising. I mean, you can't be on that forever. So it's very tricky, but I do believe weight loss should not be the very first, like on the top of the list. Mm-hmm. It is. It's kind of matched with this. We cannot lose weight until we get our brain in order and we take control of our thoughts and what we're thinking and what we're doing and coming up with a plan. So we can't just, oh, let's lose weight, because then so many people lose weight, they stop what they're doing and they regain it.
Yeah.
That's why for me, it's food boundaries for life, and the people I work with and the people that, you know, want to keep working with me, that they don't want to go back to that old life.
Yeah. I really like what you said before about making the distinction between body positivity. And what was the other thing you said? Was it celebrating obesity or something?
Obesity acceptance, or celebrating, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
It feels like when I see an influencer or someone talking about body positivity, they're celebrating obesity. It's not body positivity. Look, I can lift this, or, you know, run, or what. It's not celebrating what our body can do. It's only talking about what our body looks like. And we're so much more than what we look like.
Oh, completely. I did a podcast a little while ago, just got a bit of a clickbaity title, but it worked. And I called it Why Obese Celebrities and Supermarkets Are Keeping You Fat. And it was just this exact idea, because there's so many celebrities that have got status, and the most well-known one that celebrates her obesity is Lizzo, right?
Yep.
And, you know, there's this whole movement. And I think, yeah, this obesity acceptance and celebration is just in denial of everything one could be, you know? And I think the other conversation, which is really hard for people to tease apart, is that healthy at every size doesn't necessarily mean the same as worthy at every size, or happy at every size, or connected and loving, you know, and that physical, when we're talking about physical health, which, you know, involves emotional and spiritual and mental and all of the aspects, but it's hiding behind or masquerading, you know, as this idea that, oh, I am totally fine as who I am. And as a person and as an identity and as a personality, you're probably amazing. You're probably fantastic and healthy and happy in that way. But when we're talking about physical health, you know, is it fun climbing the stairs and being puffed out? Are you excited to go out, you know, with your boyfriend or your husband on the weekend and feel embarrassed about what you're wearing? I'm almost certain that 99% of the people that are celebrating their obesity are just trying to run away from shame.
I absolutely agree. And I've had people say to me, like, they'll see my before pictures. And I'm not super skinny. I just am wanting the health and to maintain a kind of a, it's more like a goal body or a lifestyle that just I'm comfortable with, mm-hmm. right? It's not about being super skinny.
I agree. I'm glad you clarified that.
That's not ever been a goal of mine. But in my before pictures, when I was very, very heavy, I'm smiling. I'm happy. I was joyful, because my weight didn't define me, but it definitely held me back. It definitely caused me a whole lot of problems. Mm-hmm. But I will have people say, well, you were so happy. You were fine. You know, it didn't bother you. And I said, oh, heck yes, it bothered me. I hated being that big, but no one would ever know it, because you're absolutely right. I didn't want to have that shame shared. But when I put my head on my pillow at night and I thought, gosh, I couldn't even do that with my kids, or what am I going to wear tomorrow? I just keep getting bigger. How am I going to stop this? It's exhausting and it's awful. And I would 100% agree that there is internal thoughts that are really sad, that are really sad for anyone that is so, so, so heavy. because it's about what we can do. We're limiting what our bodies can do, whether it be bend over, tie our shoe, climb upstairs, sit at a booth, a restaurant. It doesn't feel as good.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I should just add in from my personal, you know, standpoint, for anybody listening, you know, there's a great amount of empathy and sympathy to the extent that I can understand it for anybody in those situations, because, you know, waking up every day and not feeling good about yourself, of course, the Healthy at Every Size movement feels super appealing because it's the shortcut. It's the shortcut to not having to do the problem, which is probably going to take months, right?
Yes, yes.
And I would be drawn towards that as well. And I guess, you know, in many ways, that's why you and I do the type of work that we do. And I've never sat in front of a family member, a client, a friend, and ever once thought about them being less than a person because of the body they were in. It's just, I mean, it's just not in my physical makeup. And if you're surrounded by anybody like that, you should probably should kick them out.
Yes.
Right? Get rid of them. Cross them off the Christmas card list. They're a jerk. But equally, being surrounded by people that want to support you and see you do well and be healthy in the way that's best supportive for you is important as well.
Yeah, it is. You've got to have that support around you. People who love you unconditionally. Your size doesn't determine your relationship with them.
Mm-hmm.
But I've talked to so many people who've just, that I've worked with or I've seen that have lost the weight and their spouse says, you're so much more fun now.
Mm.
Not because they're skinny, but because they have an internal confidence and joy and ability to just go for a walk in their neighborhood that they didn't have to, weren't able to do before. So it's not just the weight. It's what you change in your mind that ultimately drops the weight that creates a new person, a new emotions, new levels. It like unlocks a new level of life.
I'm curious. It's really good that we sort of mentioned the skinny thing a few times because that's the risk, right? Is that every weight loss journey is about getting as skinny as possible. And then we enter the conversations of orthorexia or anorexia or,
yep,
you know, getting swinging the pendulum too far to the other side. And so with sort of food addiction and creating food boundaries, where do you navigate that space between deciding what is on the other side of that boundary and avoiding creating food fear? So people are all of a sudden scared of everything and worried about everything. And arguably, it's a reasonable fear. I mean, you know, there's in McDonald's fries, there should be 3 ingredients and there's 28. Like, why the hell is that the case, right?
Yes. So the first thing we do is when I'm working with someone and part of my course and book is on picking a goal weight, a goal range, because we cannot pick one number. We can't look at a chart and or go in a doctor's, okay, I'm picking this number, 150, 110, 200, whatever the number is, and I'm going to stick right there. Reality is, maybe for men too, but as women, certain times of month, certain things we've eaten the night before, our weight is going to fluctuate. So I really believe in about a 7-pound range. Some people have a 10-pound range because it allows us to live without fear, not worrying about that every little thing. Oh, shoot, I was at, you know, 145 pounds and now I'm at 147. No, pick a range that is based upon where your body feels comfortable,
mm-hmm,
where clothes fit, where you just feel happy. Pick that. It's not about what a chart on a doctor's wall says. You pick a number and a range, and it could be way higher than a medical doctor would say. Fine. You pick that range and live within it. And so like in the weight loss phase, you're eating certain things,
mm-hmm,
very specifically. As you kind of glide into the maintenance range, you add in, like the first week, you add in one ad. Okay. So maybe you add in a grain at lunch. Okay, I think that's the first ab I have. And then you go another week. If your body's still losing or gaining, you figure out where it's at. Then you put in another ad. Okay. And then eventually, and that's a process.
Mm-hmm.
Just as losing weight is a process. It is not overnight. It's not going to work that way. It's a process. And you're renewing your mind and going through the process also, not just your body. You're trying to do the whole thing so you don't have to go back and do it again, right?
Yeah.
And so then as you're gliding into maintenance, you add on one food, wait a week, see what your weight did, one food, you know, wait a week and see what your body did. And then eventually you settle on, here's your food plan. This is what I eat every day. This, you know, these portions, these amounts, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And then there is no fear. You know, it's going to go up and down because we're human beings. Our body's going to fluctuate a little bit depending on weather sometimes.
Yeah. Especially for women with hormones. It fluctuates a lot more than it does for men. But I like that window. And I have this idea, which is somewhat similar to what you're describing, of there's your healthy weight biologically, and then there's your happy, healthy life, right? And those weights are, it's highly unlikely those two body weights are the same number, because there might be important times of the week where you do like to have date night with your partner, or, you know, or you do like to have family pizza night, or whatever the thing is, you know. And you ask yourself the question, if I removed that, would I be happy? Maybe I'd be a lighter weight, but would I be happy? Would my kids be happy? Would my husband be happy? And I'm not saying that, you know, we have to succumb to all of their demands, because that's probably what got us into the situation we're in, right? Again, comes back to the boundary conversation. What is in my happy, healthy life, and what begins to create an unhealthy life that I don't want? But yeah, it's the healthy weight and happy, healthy weight. They're different numbers.
Yes, they are. And I think it's important. And that's also the rebel piece. Let's rebel against the world's, not rebel in, oh, we can be 500 pounds and happy. I'm not talking about that kind of rebelling, but rebelling against what a formula says we should be, because we're all very, very different. We all have different body types and structures. So rebel against that. Pick a number that's happy and healthy, and pick a range and live life abundantly. Just, we can stop being obsessed with this food and get it out of our life and just continue on. We don't have to add certain things back. Okay, good. Now, some people decide they can eat certain things and moderate. I cannot moderate, which is why I do not have any processed sugar or flour, because when I have, or if I do, it very quickly escalates back into an addictive pattern. So I don't.
So just as you were saying there, live life abundantly. You sort of had some real passion there, and I felt like that was the perfect motto on an advertisement on television. Live life abundantly, live life unbinged.
That's right. Okay, you're going to write my commercials and you're going to speak them, because I love your voice.
Love on that note, where can everybody find you on the internet and social media and all that kind of stuff?
All right. So my tagline, or my name, is Life Unbinged, obviously. And that is my name across the board. So my website is lifeunbinged.com. I'm Instagram, Life Unbinged, TikTok for now, and YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Threads. I don't know why, but everything, I just go with it and just start posting little by little, because I want to be an encouragement. I want to help people understand that it's possible.
Yeah.
But they can find me all over, everywhere. It's Life Unbinged.
Yeah, fantastic. I'll pop those in the show notes down below. So please, I encourage everybody listening, if you are resonating with what Christy is saying right now, please scroll down, click the links, jump into the Life Unbinged world. Lots of fantastic content. And it's been lovely having you here. And so I guess the final thing I want to ask you is, what is one piece of health information you wish more people knew about?
Okay. I wish more people knew that it is, although it's hard sometimes to be sugar and flour free, it is way, way harder to be food obsessed, sugar obsessed, and overweight. It is hard to plan your meals and figure out, okay, what am I going to have at this restaurant? You kind of have to do some planning. That can be hard. But to plan, execute, regroup, and hide a binge repeatedly, overeating, buying the food, where am I going to go? How am I going to lose it? That's exhausting. So being sugar and flour free is not as hard as it sounds. I promise you that.
Amazing. And I totally agree, obviously. Well, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate your time. And I look forward to chatting after we stop recording, but also hopefully getting you back soon.
Yes. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're so welcome. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast, simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.